Welcome to the In Search of Wild America podcast. Our guest today, Andrew Martin, is a teacher, intuitive oracle, and spiritual rebel who makes his living providing guidance to others by using his finely tuned intuition, wisdom, compassion, and fiery humor. His ability to take high-level, often abstract spiritual knowledge and make it practical and accessible to others is bringing revolutionary insight to his growing list of clients. His down-to-earth approach assists people in unlocking powerful, lasting change and is a catalyst for life-altering shifts and transformation. More about his work can be found on his website, lightatones.com. One of the highlights of Andrew's teachings is his monthly energy updates posted on YouTube. When we first came upon his energy updates, we found them very entertaining, but soon realized they're much, much more than entertainment. Andrew is deeply tapped into energetic patterns affecting all of us and helps clarify what many of us are sensing but can't quite put into words. Andrew is on it. I met Andrew for this interview in the far outskirts of Seattle at his sunny apartment, and one of the first things I noticed upon meeting him in person was his warmth and humanness. Welcome, Andrew. So one thing that really inspired us is that you said that you don't have to have a plan to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and so now you're moving and you're kind of taking it on faith. You know, it's right. I'm moving. I know the feeling.
Yeah.
And how have you become comfortable living life without a plan?
Yeah.
Because there's challenges. Like right now, I imagine you're somewhat challenged because you're going, is this right? I'm going back to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Higher cost of living. It's further away. It's a different state. I have to uproot here.
Yeah.
You know, and I just happen to know that feeling right now because
right.
I'm moving too. And so
yeah.
Now is where you put that not having a plan and following your guidance really to task. And it seems like you've been working for a while on this, and maybe you're pretty comfortable with it,
right?
Or you're working on being comfortable with it. How are you feeling?
Well, I think it depends on the day, really. I mean, some days I'm more sure of it than others, but you know, it's funny because I've always been that kind of kid. When I moved to Seattle when I was 18, I'd never been here before. I just knew that Seattle was where I needed to go. And when I moved to New York after 9 years in Seattle, I'd never been to New York. I just knew that that's where I needed to go. And then when I moved back to Seattle in 2005 and then to LA and San Francisco in 2008 and then came back in 2012, it's always been that I just sort of knew that it was time. And it's like there's an alarm that kind of goes off. And it's funny because now that I've qualified it and made it a thing by saying you don't have to have a plan to know what you're doing. Now all of a sudden that I've named it, it becomes something that makes me more nervous. When it's instinctual and you don't think about it and you just kind of go with it, then it's not something that I question, if that makes sense. But now that I've said, oh, you don't have to have a plan, just follow your heart. Now I'm like, fuck, I'm following my heart. Is this really what my heart is saying?
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, it just depends on the day. What I do know and what is always unmistakable is that sense that it's like the switch has been flipped and I just know that it's time to make a change or to do something new or to move in a new direction. And it's kind of what we were talking about earlier, and you were saying that you loved Seattle when you moved here, but then you felt like you had just been living here. Like
yes.
You're basically just taking up space, but you're not connected. And that's how I felt, you know, when I moved back in 2012 and started this whole journey. This conscious journey of saying, okay, I'm going to live a life of service. And I don't know what that means. I just know that this is what I have to do. I spent the last 4 years basically in an apartment, basically transforming myself and learning all of these things and, you know, building my practice and kind of learning the craft of what it is that I do when I work with people and, you know, getting everything to the point where this could be sustainable and become the thing that, you know, sustained me. And now that I'm there, and it's 3 years, it'll be 3 years next week, my 3-year anniversary of doing this full time. Hmm. Now that I'm there, I'm actually back out in the world again. And so it's not an internal journey. Now I'm out and I'm actually engaging with people and I'm saying, oh, okay, I want to do group stuff. And now I'm, you know, thinking more about, it's not so much that I'm working all of the time. Now I actually have time for a social life and quality of life and those things. And that's when I decided and realized, I was like, oh, I don't really live in Seattle anymore. I just take up space here, but my heart isn't in it anymore. And I didn't realize that because I was on a journey that was completely internal. I could have been doing it anywhere, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, the transformation I've gone through in the past 4 years, I could have been in a cave on the top of a mountain because that's basically all I did. I would leave, go to the grocery store, do some work, and then come home. And now that I'm actually out and about again, having gone to San Francisco recently, I realized, like, oh, I love San Francisco. Mm-hmm. This is where my heart is. This is where my tribe is. And this is where I want to live and thrive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the beauty of what I do is that I can do it anywhere. Oh. You know, 99% of my clients are on the phone or over, you know, video chat anyway. So I don't have a real big practice of in-person, face-to-face clients. So I'm not losing really any clientele by leaving.
Yeah. The non-location specific income, yeah. That is like, that's where
major.
It's at.
Thank God for the internet, really.
Oh, yeah.
Because what would I do otherwise, you know?
Oh, it's so true. Let's look at the next question. Do you think that, like, with not having a plan,
yeah,
and now that you've been doing that for a while, and I think every self-aware spiritual individual on their path, eventually they do come to that, and they're working on that. They start realizing that, sometimes you need a plan, like you need a shopping list,
right?
But you do logic and plans can only get you so far in life,
right?
You know, and that's a lot of. Do you find that having some, and it's probably an obvious question, but having been doing that for a while, having some successes with not having a plan has helped you gain confidence in not having a plan? Because that is so absolutely counterintuitive to the outside world.
Totally.
And most people would say, you're crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so it really takes a bit of, has success helped your courage along those lines?
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, when I first started doing this, and my plan was I want to be happy, self-employed, and helping people. And that was it. And that's not a plan I can take to the bank and get a loan on, right? That's not a business plan. But, you know, it's funny, I was talking about this earlier today with a client, and this idea that an answer and an explanation are two different things. So when I ask, like, is it time for me to move, or is it time for me to make this choice, or should I be moving in the direction of self-employment? And the answer is yes, I want to always get a reason why. And I think that's what we all, you know, a plan oftentimes gives an explanation. So if I do this, then I'll get that. And if I do this, then I'll get that. And so that sort of satisfies the need for a logical, rational chain of events.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're just going on faith and instinct, you oftentimes say, okay, well, I'm feeling like I should move in this direction. Is this right? And then you feel the yes, move in this direction. And then the why is oftentimes what we're still looking for.
Oh, yeah.
So the plan is I trust. And at this point in the game, I've had enough experience with this. And I've been successful enough at this. And I also see this work for my clients. Quite frankly, the work that I help my clients do, they come back to me a year later and say, oh my God, you were totally right. This has been the most amazing thing. And here's how my life is transformed. That kind of gives me some relief. I'm like, oh good, I'm not just making this stuff up. You know,
yes.
There is some validity here. And it does have an effect that is a positive one and a desired one. But it's just going on faith and trust and just saying, okay, I all I have to know is how I feel about the decision that I'm making, right? And does this feel like the right thing? And yes, there may be some anxiety or some nervousness, of course, because you're making a choice that you have no guarantee of, but you have no guarantee anyway, right? I could draft the most beautiful business plan and take it to a bank and get a $10 million loan and still fail. It happens every day. So a plan is no guarantee of anything other than it will satisfy the mind. But I'm not looking to live my life through my mind. I'm looking to live from the heart. And understanding that the mind is an excellent assistant. When I let the heart inspire me and say, okay, let's move in the direction of happy, self-employed, and helping people. And I go, okay, this is the intangible inspiration. I don't know what this means or how to bring it to light. But I can start now by saying, okay, what is the first step in happy, self-employed, and helping people? And how do I get there? And the mind says, well, we can do this. And what if we did that? So the mind helps me bring those things into physical manifestation. But trying to satisfy the mind is like trying to figure out what the cake is going to taste like before I've even baked it.
Yeah.
There's no way to know. All I have to know is that I really want to make a cake. And I have no idea how it's going to turn out. But I follow the things that I'm guided to do in the moment. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it's based on someone else's experience. And they say, well, when I did this, this is how my cake turned out. And I can go, okay, there's a little bit of reassurance from somebody else. But ultimately, if I don't feel like it's the right choice, I'm not going to make it.
Yeah.
Is that explained? Is that an answer?
That really does. I like that. Yeah, it's like... Well, to me, one thing that speaks to me is the notion of there's no guarantee anyway. Mm-hmm. So that, like, really, life isn't safe, and there's no guarantees.
Yeah.
And so, what risk are you really taking?
Right, right. And would you much rather live a life that is feels more like you and that feels more authentic, and then fail, or would you rather, you know, do something that you're like, my heart's not in it, and I don't want to do this, and then I fail anyway, right? It's like insult to injury. At least you can say, well, I followed my heart, and I took the chance, and I took the risk, and I learned something, and perhaps I grew from it, and yeah, I failed, but at least it was on my own terms.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And it seems like life's going to have successes and failures anyway.
Right.
Why not make them epic? Why?
Right, exactly. Right, make it monumental.
Let's do this, exactly.
You know? I want a cinematic failure. Yeah.
You know?
Oh. Well, and it's funny because the quote that you read, you know, earlier about, you know, just, you know, living through your feeling and how you feel mm-hmm. about your experience is most important. And I think that's really it. And it's, the, you know, that the human experience is the means to the end for the divine. Like, we have been so taught to think that the human experience is its own means to its own end. And if I, you know, I need to produce and consume and reproduce and then die. And that's the agenda. But the divine says, no, there's so much more you can have. And when you understand that you are the divine and you have chosen your human experience to be the way that you express yourself in form, then that turns everything on its head. And you go, well, there's no way I can lose. Because if I go out and get hit by a bus tomorrow, who cares? Game over. I'm back up in non-physical having a party and none of those worries mean anything. So if I just understand and accept that, oh, okay, I am not separate from this thing we call the divine. I am the divine who has chosen to experience myself as separate in a human form. Then I realize, like, oh, my success and my failure, my death and my birth, my joy and my sorrow, my health and my illness are all equally as important. Because all I did was come here to learn through the human experience. So I don't care if I'm successful or not, because in the divine perspective, that is, there's no such thing.
Oh.
Right? We measure it all through our human perspective. And that's such a minimized, diminished way to look at things.
Oh, and following your heart, following your guidance, which as you follow it, it becomes more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Like that quote from earlier, you know, blessings ignored become curses.
Yeah.
And so as you accumulate more blessings and curses, if you're working on it, like boldness has a certain strength to it.
Yeah.
It like Joseph Campbell said, you know, follow your bliss and doors will open where they would not be for others. They are pure for you. Because it reminds me of when I was younger, I did a lot of motocross. And something I noticed as a young kid was it was tremendously dangerous. I don't do it anymore.
You
know? But I noticed that people only wiped out, became injured, like bad things only ever happened when they weren't fully committed.
Mm-hmm.
When you didn't have fear, when you just went into it, when you went into corners, got your front wheel in that ditch and you just punched it and you came out flying.
Yeah.
Even if you did wipe out, it was just spectacular and epic and you just hopped back on your bike and you kept going. It was the moment somebody clenched, they went, that there was fear, that's when there was injuries. So like in a sense, if you can cultivate fearlessness.
Yeah.
It's like even if things don't quite go right, oh, it'll be great.
Right.
You'll just bounce right back.
Yeah. And the idea that fear, you know, we so often think of fear as, you know, a proof that we're doing something wrong or that we're not doing, you know, no, you can have the fear, but say, well, I'm going to jump anyway. Right. Like the fear isn't an evidence that you're doing something wrong or that you're incapable. You know, it's like when I moved to New York when I was, you know, it was when in 99, when I was 27 or 28 years old. And I moved to New York and I'd never been there before, never even visited. And people would say to me, Andrew, you're crazy. What are you doing moving to New York? Like this is, you don't have any idea what you're getting yourself into. And I would say, well, what, why should people move to New York all the time with never having lived there? People move to this country where they don't even speak the language, you know, and I have a job, I have a career lined up. I know exactly what I'm going to be doing once I get there. So what do I have to lose? And it's funny because once I moved to New York, I think had I visited there before, I would not have moved. I would have had a lot of fear because there would have been a million reasons why not to do it.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of like you're, you know, when you're motocross, when you're doing any, if you've never seen someone crash and burn and you've never crashed and burned yourself, you have no concept of even what that means. So you are fearless, right? So, yeah, I think it's just about cultivating that trust and that faith that, you know what, if I stumble and fall, who cares? So what?
Yeah.
So what? I mean, I just get back up and keep doing it anyway. But you're right. That tension and that, like, you get to the edge and then you almost jump and then you just hold yourself back at the last minute.
You're like, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's, you're going to crash and burn.
You're going to crash and burn.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. If you'd been full on, you might have wiped out,
right,
but you'd have just bounced.
Totally.
Big difference.
Totally.
Oh, wow. Let's see. So, another question here. So you stated that watching how others have come into their awareness of what you term the divine blueprint and their creation struck a chord with you. Is this what nudged you into teaching?
Well, it's funny because, you know, when I'm working, when I'm in practice and I'm working with clients, it really is, I just sort of let the information come through. And I'm very aware that, you know, it is a channeling of sorts and that I'm not really consciously sharing a lot of the stuff. It just sort of comes through. And over time, I see repetitions occurring and patterns emerging in session. And then I start to tune into it and go, oh, this is a thing, right? This is a tool. Now a teaching has been created just through these sessions. And I'm very aware that a lot of that is my guides working through me. But the teaching thing actually came first. Both my parents are teachers. So I kind of grew up in that environment. And then when I lived in New York, I was a makeup artist in another lifetime, or another part of this lifetime. And I was a trainer for a long time. So I was teaching people how to be makeup artists and teaching them, you know, all different sorts of levels and aspects of the industry. So teaching is something that came naturally to me. Mm-hmm. And the teaching came first. And it's funny because this divine blueprint thing, which, you know, is really when we realize the work that we really came here to do starts to call us forward. That's what I see as the divine blueprint. It starts to unpack itself and say, hey, wait a minute, there's a whole other agenda that you really haven't been living yet. And it's time to start doing that. Mm-hmm. So that's when the divine begins to assert itself and say, nope, we're moving a new direction here. Nope, can't do that anymore. Nope, are you sure you want to say yes to that again? And we start to sort of have those existential questions. What I realized is that the beauty of that is that we see, or for myself, I saw that everything I had done previous to being, you know, doing what I do now serves me in some way. So the fact that I'm already comfortable teaching people and that I'm already comfortable in the spotlight and on, you know, on a stage in front of a lot of people. I also had a theater background growing up. So I have no problem being in the spotlight. I have no problem being in front of a room full of people and trying to command their attention for 2 hours. You know, I've no problem just speaking off the top of my head. But I didn't realize what that was leading me to until now. Now I see, I'm like, oh.
We've always been in training.
Yeah, I've always been in training.
Always, yeah.
Yeah. All of us.
Yeah, and it's, I like that you mentioned, you said, in another lifetime.
Yeah.
And so, do you feel that actually happens? Because I have that feeling that literally, in this lifetime, it's as if there's been chapters. Like, mm-hmm. where literally, you've changed so much. You love all these past lives within this one, but you go, man, these really are past lives within this life.
Totally.
I've changed so much that I can't say the person I was when I was 22. That's literally, it might as well be, it's a past life.
Yeah.
Yeah, does that kind of segmentation really happen within a lifetime? Could a person say that you literally are living multiple, like a few lifetimes literally within one?
I totally think we are. And, you know, if you want to get into sort of the quantum view of it and like the multiverse view and timelines and all of that in multiple dimensions, I think, you know, the way that I look at it and the guides have talked a lot about this is how, you know, if you think about where you're sitting now, there's literally an infinite number of ways that you can get up from this chair. You know, you can do it with eyes closed, eyes open, shirt off, shirt on, singing, whatever. And that's just you. Then also take into consideration the environmental factors. There's a fly on the window. Now it's raining. Now it's sunny. Whatever. All of those are those are all potentiality. And depending on whatever choice I make now creates a new potentiality. And that collapses all the other ones. But I often think that there are other versions of me that are still in New York doing what I was doing. There are other versions of me who are still slogging through their life trying to figure out what it is that they came here to do and who aren't as fearless as I was or who made a different choice. So I do think, because I look back and it's funny because there are times when I even have to think like, wait, was that really me? Or is that someone that I heard about that did that? Or was that a book that I read? And I'm like, no, that was really me when I was 25 or whatever, doing those things and making those choices. And it's like the, you know, the quote when you were reading some of my quotes, I'm like, wait, did I really say that?
Yes.
So and we have evidence of it. But I think when you live in the moment, which is really sort of the pinnacle, I think, of the spiritual experience, as we all seek to just really thrive and live in this moment, then you really do realize how fluid it all is and how there is no concept of linear time in the sense of beginning, middle, and end, that in itself is a construct that we use to help us track our progress. But ultimately, it's just a game, right? It's just an illusion. And when we're in that moment, then it really is fluid and free. And I think we all have those moments of like, wait a minute, did I just do that? Or wait, I thought it was yesterday or it was an hour ago. And then, you know, it seems like hours have gone by. So that loss of time and that idea of fluidity, I think, is really a marker of being sort of deeply entrenched in the spiritual experience.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Yeah, I think, well, recently, in the last few months, some of the Wild America team have experienced missing time.
Yeah.
You know, like, just where we go, I don't remember. I don't remember. Do you remember? No, and you realize that you actually don't remember what happened a few hours ago or for this segment of time. It's just, you know where you were, but you go, it's almost like we're abducted by aliens or something. Like, what happened? Because we were both there and we don't remember what happened.
Or when you have, and I think that we're seeing that, you know, as we're moving into these higher frequencies and this fifth dimensional experience is becoming more real. You know, we are seeing it's things like, you know, I put my glasses down here and then I leave the room and I'm like, where are my glasses? I swear they were here. I just saw them and I turn around and they're not there. And then I turn back around and there they are. And it's beyond just sort of I misplaced it. It does really literally feel like you're kind of moving in and out of dimensions and timelines and it's not fluid anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you had those experiences because I guess for us, they're not really discerning. Disconcerting any longer, but still. It's always nice when someone goes, oh, yes, that happens.
Yeah, totally. You're not crazy.
Yeah, that might be a lot of the spiritual path. Just, you know, I'm not crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Okay. Or at least we all are.
Right,
we share the same delusion. That's comforting.
Right, yeah, exactly. We'll all get there together.
Oh, gosh. So when you tell others what you do for work, what do you tell them?
That is so funny.
Because people in our society here, it's a big one, and it always kind of bothers me, actually.
Yeah.
In a charming way, it bothers me. But people tend to ask, well, what do you do?
Yeah.
It's like, well, how about who am I?
Or right,
what am
exactly.
I about? Or they go, well, what do you do? Then I'll know everything.
Right, exactly. Because that'll give me a box to put you in.
Yeah, yeah. How can I define you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I went through probably a hundred different versions of that answer, like trying to find one that felt real and comfortable. And one that felt authentic, and then also one that didn't freak people out, you know, because sometimes when early on I would say I'm a psychic, because that was just the easiest thing that I could use to describe what I do. And oftentimes people would sort of like, okay, all right, whatever, and just sort of, you know, make their way to the other side of the room. But now I say, when people say, what do? I say, I help people transform their lives.
Oh, you're a life coach.
Yeah.
Okay, now I know who
right.
you are. You know, so much easier.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's funny because then I do just sort of let them decide what that means.
Oh.
Because sometimes it is very coach oriented. And sometimes, because really my job is to just be a vessel for whatever shows up for that person. You know, everything that I do is based upon the seeking that's in front of me. So whatever you are seeking, whatever you are ready for, whatever you need is what I bring through.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny. I say, you know, the irony of it all is, you know, now I'm 45 and I finally found out what I'm supposed to be doing with my life and it has nothing to do with me. Like, really, because I just show up. You know, my job happens before I'm working with my clients. It's, you know, doing my own work and learning how to empty myself out and learning how to receive and be very good at listening and connecting and being authentic and all of those things. But once I show up, I don't really do anything. I just kind of connect and open my mouth and whatever comes out is what comes out. But yeah, I help people transform their lives. That's my answer if people ask me what I do.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
I like that because I'm reminded of in Mel Brooks's History of the World, part one or two, I forget, Socrates goes to the unemployment line and they ask him, what do you do? And he goes to this rather flowery, nice, beautiful description, and the lady goes, oh, so you're a bullshit artist. You know, and he's like, okay, yes, you know. And then she goes, okay, did you try to bullshit this week? You know,
right. Right. How many times did you try to bullshit this week? Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that would say that I'm a bullshit artist. I think I could be called that too.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you use the like History of the World version, it's kind of flattering.
Right.
Say,
yeah.
I'm a bullshit artist. You know? Me and Socrates.
Yeah. In good company.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. So here's one. The one thing that we like about your videos is that you tend to, you have strength.
Mm.
You have a force of will, and it's one thing that it seems that is out of style in society today is strength.
Yeah,
you know, especially masculinity of any kind is really, I mean, self determination, like Emerson's, you know, self reliance, everything.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if it's about your own strength, it's really out of style, and so it seems like in your videos and your teachings, it sounds like. It's very risque territory here that you're telling people, you're maybe trying to help them cultivate an inner strength.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, how do you get away with that?
Well, I think, you know, I think I've been pretty good at sort of flying under the radar until recently. Like, things have started to pick up, you know, speed, and I'm getting more attention for my work. But, you know, I think that it's sort of who I am. It's the blueprint that I came in with. And I'm very aware now in hindsight that, you know, my guides, my spiritual team, my higher self, whatever you want to call it, have always been very present within me. Mm-hmm. And I think the more that I've allowed myself to surrender to that divine presence, which is really who I am, it's who we all are, and let that sort of merge with who I am and let that become a union of sorts, the less interested I am in protecting other people's feelings about how strong I am or am not. You know, I'm not here to make people comfortable. I'm not here to be nice. I'm here to be kind. I'm here to inspire. And I'm here to fire people up and say, you are the same force that created the planet and the sun and the stars. You are the same force that creates what you want. You are what you seek. So this idea that it's going to be handed to us, and this idea that we have to wait for permission to receive it or somehow express it or speak our truth, infuriates me on many levels, because I think that that's the problem. We've been trained to believe that it's outside of us, right? My job knows better. My boss knows better. My spouse, my preacher, my doctor, my government, my somebody, something out there is responsible for my happiness, my success, my failure, my joy, my anger, whatever. We have been completely absolved of all personal responsibility in so many ways, right? It's all, well, we got to control this, or we got to control that, or we got to medicate this, or we got to medicate that, or we got to get rid of this, or we got to ban that, or we got to amend this, and it's always something else out there. And the truth is that there's a small group of people who have a lot to gain by us not claiming our power. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who are currently deem themselves the one in power who have a lot to gain by us not remembering the truth of who we are, because there's a lot more of us than there are of them. And I'm certainly not out there to pit anybody against one another. But I think what's important is that, and the whole point of this spiritual experience for me, is that everybody gets a seat at the table. Everybody gets a say, everybody gets a voice, everybody gets the right to receive what they require for their experience. Everyone has the right to be, you know, healthy, balanced, and thriving, but no one is going to hand it to us. If I'm not willing to stand up and speak my truth and say, hey, wait a minute, this is what I see is true, this is what I know to be true, and this is what I feel, and no one's going to express that for me. And I think because I spent so many years of my life growing up feeling disempowered, you know, growing up as a small kid in a small town in Wyoming, and a weird kid and a gay kid, I was bullied pretty horribly. And so growing up feeling very disempowered and never really understanding, I think I came in with this fire inside of me, and I never really understood why other people wanted to suppress it.
Yeah.
It just really didn't make sense to me. And so I spent a lot of years trying to figure out what was wrong with me. Like, why don't people feel the same way that I do? And why do the way that I feel and choose to express myself scare them so much? And I realize now, I look back and I go, oh, I'm a person who's been walking around pretty self-contained and content when comfortable with exercising my power, and that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, because all of a sudden they're required to look in their life at where they do not exercise their personal power. And if they see me out there saying, nope, I'm the one that's doing this, this is my responsibility, I'm accountable for all of it, and I'm not willing to point the finger at anybody else, all of a sudden you have to look at yourself reflected in that and go, oh, well, here's where I'm not taking responsibility, and here's where I'm not being the one, you know, who's responsible for my choices and my actions. And nobody likes that.
Nobody likes to be
called out on their irresponsibility and their personal, you know, disempowerment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so it sounds like a term that I think of sometimes is people are born self-aware. Mm-hmm. It seems like some people are born self-aware, and then some people, something at some point in their life causes this awakening.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like you're either born with it or it comes later.
Yeah.
And it seems like you were born with it. So it seems like those who are born with it, especially, it takes them maybe half their lifetime or a third of it to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's almost like you have to catch up with where you incarnated.
Totally.
For a while. And that can be quite disturbing as a child, as a youngster. It's like reality is just weird. Like everybody else seems to just, I don't know, get along.
Right, but yeah.
Why am I so
But I'm the weirdo, yeah.
Yeah, this is really challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm...
I've never thought of it that way, but I love that. And it's funny, my granny, you know, she always told me I was a late bloomer. She always said, I know, when you're 40, you're going to figure it out. And she was right. And I think it is, you're sort of born with this understanding of who you are, but then you're thrust into a society or a box that says, no, this isn't who you are, and you can't know who you are, it's impossible, or this is who you should be. And so then you spend all this time trying to be that or trying to figure out why you don't fit that. And then at some point you go, oh, I see. I just have to unlearn all the bullshit. I actually kind of knew what I was doing at 5 years old.
Yeah, and being a the term late bloomer,
yeah,
it reminds me of if you've ever planted like a row of lavender, let's say, mm-hmm. and you go, oh, well, I guess those didn't work out. It's been a year, and they're just sitting there, and they haven't done anything. Now, to the unskilled eye, they go, oh, nothing's happening.
Right.
And oftentimes remind people, I'd say, no, they're growing roots.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's when I think of being a late bloomer, or especially being born self-aware, it's like, no, maybe it seemed like it took a while for something to get going, because like, maybe life sort of felt like it was in a retrograde motion, like mm-hmm. you were just stuck standing still. And people do that in many ways. They do it in jobs, where they live, relationships, in a lot of ways. They go, they retrograde their life.
Yeah.
You know, and but the truth is, it's because everything's happening internally. And in a way, the universe, you know, is helping us out. It's just kind of keeping us out of trouble and stuck right. while we grow these roots internally. And then one day, once you own those, you just...
Yeah, that's a great way. Yeah, because then you know who you are, and it's very clear, and there's no question, right? And if you are one, because it's funny, because those of us who have that experience, we quite often are the ones who begin to push the envelope and push the boundaries. And, you know, even myself, I find that within spiritual experiences and communities, people look at me, other spiritual people, you know, bunny quotes around that, and they sort of look at me like, what is he talking about? And that's not right, and that's not true, or, you know, that's, you know, what is it? Blasphemy, right? But to know who I am and to go, nope, that's true. For me, that's true, that feels true, and that's really who I am. It takes great strength and a real sense of who you are to be able to sort of withstand that and be the one that's kind of the forebearer of the new information or the new paradigm.
You're really building those spiritual muscles.
Yeah.
Because how can you do that until you're sure of who you are and you're sure of what you feel and believe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or else you're just kind of, I don't know, phony, holy, half-assed, basically. That's,
right. Well, you know, yeah, it's like love and light, love and light. What do you, I mean, you know, I say love sometimes is the smack upside the head, and light is a fucking bolt of lightning that fries you to the ground. So it's not always soft and easy.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, okay, so you've remarked in recent energy updates that you've detected patterns of synchronicity within your clients.
Mm.
What do you think the driving force behind these synchronicities is? Are we all unfolding together? And if so, how are we connected?
Mm. God, that's a good question.
Aaron wrote it.
Good job, Aaron.
There you go.
Well, I do. I say that, you know, clients come in batches. And I think that it's interesting because I think that it's so multifaceted in that, you know, it serves the client in the sense that, you know, I get sort of on a roll or a momentum with a certain teaching or knowledge that's coming through. And each time it shows up again, it becomes more vibrant and more deep and more detailed or, you know, more distilled and pure in its essence. And so I think it serves those people in that, you know, when they come to me and they're receiving that information, it's really clear and very powerful. I think that for me, it serves me in the sense that it teaches me something new. And then in turn, when I get a batch of clients, then that unfolds into something that I can share in a video, which serves a whole other group of people. So it's like the people who are having experience come in and they sort of teach me about it through their own receipt of the teaching that comes through me. And then I in turn take that and sort of unbox it and then share it in a video or in a post. And then that reaches another few thousand people. And then it sort of, so it's this weird fractal thing. It really is the repetition of the same impression. It is the same energy structure and the same shape, if you want to think of it in those terms. And I just sort of pass it on and it replicates itself through the other people. And absolutely, we're all in this together. You know, if you think of it in those terms, it's, you know, what is that old Germac commercial when she's like, she told her friend and then she told her friend and so on and so on and you know, and the screen fills up with like all the squares of the one. It's that same kind of idea. You know, the guides talk about this a lot, that, you know, the way to transform the planet is to transform the self. And that when we turn on our own light, we illuminate the, you know, the sphere that we have access to, right? And then we dispel the darkness that's in our immediate vicinity. And then before, and each person does that, and before you know it, you look around you and you've got a whole crew of people who are lit up. And then, you know, 100 lights is so much stronger than one light, but one light is still that same light. And then when you multiply by that 100 and 1,000 and 10,000 and then a country or a planet, then that's when this sort of fractal thing takes on a life of its own. So it's hard to describe why it happens. I think that it just happens in the way that it happens. You know, I just surrender to the process, and I know that spirit is the one. You know, very early on, my guides told me, Andrew, your job is not to find clients. Your job is to find your truth, and we'll bring you the clients. And that has been true to this day. I mean, I promote my stuff here and there as much as I can, but I don't really have to do anything now at this point to find my clients. I just have to keep showing up, and they keep coming to me in response to the message that I'm sharing. But I'm just the vessel for it. So I think that if you look at it in those terms, yeah, there is a greater intelligence at work, for sure.
I like that. And you mentioned the fractal nature of things. Yeah. Can you speak to that? Because we like fractals.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, I mean, this is where we can really get a sort of mind pretzel about it. I think sacred geometry, and fractals are a part of that. You know, and you can measure sound, frequency, vibration. All of these can be measured in that way. All of these can be measured visually, mathematically, like visual mathematics. And so a fractal is just an extrapolation or an iteration or a repetition of an initial pattern or an initial frequency or explosion or whatever. And if you think about, you know, think about it, if we're, you know, we're always looking in science from, you know, sort of the human perspective, Western science is always looking to find what's the initial impulse, right? What's the big bang? And so even that is just an iteration and a repetition of an initial frequency and an initial impulse. And it is just repeated over and over. And we add our own flavor to it, right? We add our own impression or our own shape or angle to it through our own creation. But ultimately, that becomes part of a larger pattern. You know, I see it very clearly. And the thing with the lessons and the teachings is a perfect example. Is that the initial impulse comes in through a teaching or a lesson, and then it's shared with 10 people, and then I learn something through it, and then I share it with 1,000 more people, but it's the same frequency and the same vibration. And I was just thinking of that today. I was sitting on the sofa, and I have my morning coffee and talk to myself.
Yes, I
did. And talk to my guides, and I was thinking of fractals. You know, there is no signature. There's no shape or pattern or frequency that is not universal. And if I look at a plant and I say, oh, well, the shape, the fractal expression of these trees is the same as the veins in my body, or the same as the, you know, the whatever in my lungs, or the same as the neurons in the brain. It's the same exact math. It is the same. You can measure it exactly, right? And so that system and that pattern is not about what it is. It's that I am informed by these fractals. These fractals are the foundations of everything, and they build the systems, and they decide, well, if it's a tree or a lung or, you know, a circulatory system, it's all the same. It serves the same purpose, right? It serves the same end. And when we begin to see these repetitions and these consistencies show up, that to me is like, how can it not all be connected? Because we're all having the same shape of an experience. Does that make sense
at all? I like that. Yeah, it does to me.
Yeah, so to me, fractals are fascinating because no matter macro or micro, no matter how big or how small you get, it's the exact same experience.
No, I like that. That actually sounds... I like that. Wow. So, one question is, and this is a couple, so
yeah.
I'll just read this, and I'm throwing a quick list of questions, but I think it'll flow.
Okay.
So, don't be overwhelmed.
I'll try not to.
Yeah. When did you realize your emotional energetic state was the fuel for your creation? Like something we've come to recently is, you know, spirit really needs the will to do anything because spirit's just kind of stoic. It's like, hey, whatever. The will goes, I want, and the spirit goes, I'll create.
Yep. You know?
So how did you find the courage to become a systems buster? What made you fearless and willing to embrace your discomfort? How did you break out of fear? Now that you are free from illusion, how has life gotten easier? And the last part, are there more synchronicities on your path? So I know it's a lot of questions, but you can just take just like the overall feel of that, and we can...
Well, I think it's kind of, you know, what it think it reminds me of what we were just talking about in the beginning is like, you know, pain may be a part of life, right? We can say that maybe pain is a part of the human experience, but suffering is created. You know, suffering is a human creation. We create suffering through our resistance to things. And in 2012, for me, when it really hit home, okay, so in 2005... I had my initial clairaudient experience. And long story short, I had been in New York for 7 years. I was miserable. I had lost my apartment. I was living with friends in Jersey City, like literally sleeping on my mattress in their living room. And I was supposed to have been there for like a week or two or a month maybe. And it had been 8 months at this point. And they said, Andrew, you got to go. We love you. But this is not a three-way situation. Yeah. There's two of us that live here and we need you out. And so I was just at the end of my rope and I just completely surrendered. I was like, I don't know what to do. I need help. And I heard a voice say, you do realize that it doesn't have to be this difficult, don't you? You can move back to Seattle if you want to. And so 3 weeks later, I did just that. I sold everything I owned, bought a ticket, and was back in Seattle. Fast forward to 2012, and I was in the exact same situation. I was living in Los Angeles. I was working a job that I didn't like. I was, again, suffocating under the weight of this life that I was like, I don't even want this life. Why am I working so hard to sustain it, right? And I was miserable. So I decided to paint my bathroom, and I was in the bathroom painting the wall, and I heard the exact same voice say, you do realize as soon as you finish painting this wall that it's going to be time to leave, don't you? And I thought, okay, that's it. That's it. It was such a moment of clarity that the exact same voice, it was frickin' Groundhog Day. The window dressing was different. The set was different. The location was different. I was in LA and not New York. And I was working for a modeling agency and I wasn't a makeup artist, right? So the details were different. But the core essence, I mean, if we're talking about this from like a script perspective, the character was exactly the same. The emotions of the character were exactly the same. The arc of that character were exactly the same. The only difference was the set dressing. And I just had this moment of clarity and I was like, oh, I get it. I'm in like this loop. And this is as good as it gets if it's only by the force of my own will. Oh. Until I'm willing to let spirit be a part of my creation and co-create with me, this is as high as it gets. I have reached the glass ceiling of my experience and everything from here is down. And the amount of energy that it is going to take to sustain me at this peak is going to exhaust me. And that's when I'm going to start getting sick. And that's when I'm going to start, you know, having drug abuse problems. You know, this is what I see in people's lives. When you reach that glass ceiling and you can't do it on your own anymore and the sheer force of your will is not enough, it's what you said, like source says, well, I'm just here, right? I am. And your will and what you imprint upon me, basically the container that you put me in is what creates your experience. And your container is created by your emotions and your energetic impulses. But when I had that moment of clarity and realizing like, oh, I'm never going to get beyond this point. This is as happy as I'm going to get until I'm willing to surrender to the truth of who I am. And that moment changed everything for me. And at that point, I began to see like, oh, this is about me surrendering my bullshit ideas of what I think I need to be happy or who I think I am. This minimized, diminished, such a short, small, tiny version of who I really am. I can't live like that anymore. I can't live in that definition. And so, you know, for the next 4 years, it was definitely a struggle of wills. And I still have those tantrums. I want what I want now. Right? Yes. Where is my stuff? Where are my clients? Where is my house? Where is my boyfriend? Where is my this? Whatever. Because we are still, you know, the mind still thinks, the will still thinks that it's the one running the show. But it's just this constant process of learning and remembering that, no, this is the means to the experience of who I really am, which is the divine. And when I really understand that, then that's when the magic starts to happen. And I realize like, oh, I can rewrite everything. I can rewrite the entirety of my experience when I let myself come from that place. So, what was the question?
Oh, yeah. It was so many questions, but it was so I think you've gone over a lot of it, but just to read it again, you know, when did you realize that your emotional energetic state was the fuel for your creation? How did you find the courage to become a systems buster? What made you fearless and willing to embrace your discomfort?
Mm-hmm.
How did you break out of fear? And now that you're free from illusion, we think you are.
Yeah. For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. Has life gotten easier? Are there more synchronicities on your path?
So yes.
A lot of questions.
More synchronicities. It has gotten easier because I realize I'm not doing it alone.
Mm.
And I say now that when you're having struggle and difficulty and strife, that's a sign that you're trying to do work that does not belong to you.
Oh, that's great.
So it's not for you to do in that moment. When you're banging your head against the wall, that's you, the sign from spirit saying, hey, dummy, you don't have to do it alone. If you just like, you know, throw up your hands and pivot in the direction of your truth, then we can help you. Because what I know to be true is in every moment and every choice, one of two things is happening. We're either moving away from our truth or towards it. Mm-hmm. And the only way we ever know, or oftentimes the only way we know, is by how we feel, especially in the beginning of our journey. That's all we know is how we feel. And we say, well, I feel really crappy, and I don't want to feel crappy anymore. So what choices can I make to feel less crappy? And that's where I was. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know who I was in 2012 living in Los Angeles. I had no clue who Andrew was. All I knew was who he wasn't. Mm-hmm. All I knew was that I was miserable already. I was already at the bottom of the barrel. There was no way it could get worse. So why not surrender? Why not say, okay, I don't have to do it alone? So when I'm either moving towards my truth or away from it, when I'm moving away from my truth, I have in essence decided to put my spiritual helpers in quarantine, because spirit will not help us tread a path away from ourselves. It can't.
Oh, that's great.
So the only way I can do that is through the force of my own will. And spirit says, all right, cool. But your rations are on your own. Your sustenance is on your own. Your resources, your energy, your time, it's all you, boo. If you want to do it, go ahead. But you're on your own. Not because I'm punishing you, but I can't help you deny who you are.
Mm.
So when I finally pivot and decide to move in the other direction and moving towards my truth, that's when the spirit's like, hallelujah, he finally gets it. He hears us. And we've been here the whole time. It's like when you're a parent and you're watching your kid play soccer, you know your kid's going to get hurt. You know she's going to trip, you know, fall down, break her ankle or whatever, but you can't stop her. You know that that's what she's decided to do. Yeah. But the minute that we allow ourselves to be coached, the minute that we allow ourselves to be supported, the minute that we allow ourselves to be assisted, that's when we turn towards the truth and we take our helpers out of quarantine and they say, okay, now we can help you do this. We can do this with you, but there's a new set of rules you got to play by. You're not the one in charge anymore. This is a cooperative effort.
That's great. Yeah. It reminds me of In Search of Wild America, where we had this idea that was inspired by Thor driving by in his chariot. It just thrilled us. I mean, a lot of people would love being thrilled by this. Yeah. So, he was just being himself. Like, we joke about, who knows how many people he inspires just being so Thor.
Totally.
Just driving down the street. Oh, you know, I think we actually chased him along, just loving him.
Yeah.
You know, but like, he didn't notice us. And like, even to be blown off by him was great, because he didn't do it on purpose. He was just so focused. Like,
he's just Thor.
He's just inspiring the world.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. And so, but that place you were at of like, many would look at you and say, well, you had everything. You had a career, you had this, you had that. Like, everything's working for you.
Yeah.
And I know something I felt, excuse me, many times, is that you're profoundly miserable. And others will look at you and think you're profoundly successful.
Yeah.
And it seems like that really is what happens for the self-aware person. It doesn't, I think of there being like, a guy, Neil Kramer, coined like willing and unwilling people.
Yeah.
Or you could say self-aware and normals, you know, bless them.
Right? Yeah.
You know, but
Muggles and
Muggles. Yeah. You know, so you look at that and you go, okay, so, because it always has puzzled me is where, like, I can have a life that others would envy and go, oh, it's just everything's working for you. Yeah. How lucky you are, how talented you are. And I'll think, no, I'm actually, I don't tell them that, but it really sucks. I'm miserable, and it gets worse every day.
Totally.
You know? And so I've been in that place, you know, more than once in life. But it is really, what's very helpful in like what the things that you're teaching is that it helps people realize, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm just self-aware. I was born self-aware. I've become self-aware. You know, for whatever reason, I am spiritual.
Yeah.
I have that connection. And so that really helps people do something with it, understand it. Because some people, I think, are depressed and their life is looking good, but they don't understand. Well, they're figuring it out. Because I know, I look at others who are, let's say, living a life similar to mine, and they're digging it. They're really, really happy. And I'm just looking at them like, you know, how can you be, oh, it's so awful. How can you, you know? And then they look at me and like, what's that guy's problem? You know?
What a weirdo. What is he doing?
Yeah. So, it's great that there can be like YouTube's like yours, like work like yours, or somebody can go, oh, you know, I'm really miserable. Oh, someone sends in this video. Check this guy out. And they go, oh, okay. Now I'm just, you know. So actually, it reminds me of the idea of tribe. I mean, it seems like there's spiritual tribes on the same like level of awareness that are constantly evolving, constantly emerging. But that it seems to me, what I've noticed in the last couple of years, is that tribes are finding each other.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something that we're working on, like in this project, is to help the greater tribe find each other.
Yeah, we're starting to come out of the dark and out of the woodwork and come out of the closet, so to speak. And, you know, it is, it's, and it's funny what you were saying about, you know, people would look, absolutely, people would look at my life in LA and go, my God, you have an amazing apartment, you have an amazing job, you're working for a company that most people, many people, would just do anything to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And I was miserable. And I think that that's the, you know, the truth of this spiritual experience from my perspective is that you're the only one that knows what your truth feels like.
Yes.
You're the only one who can do what you came here to do. Literally, you are the only one because you are the unique fractal expression. And you are the impulse and only you can replicate and repeat whatever it is that you've got going on inside. And you are the steward for that. It's your responsibility to express that and give that life. And so that's why it's, you know, and when we start to wake up to that, we often realize like, oh, that's what I live in a world that just has decided this is what success looks like. And if I don't achieve that dream or if I'm not in pursuit of that dream, somehow I'm the failure or I'm the weirdo. When no, it's the system that is the problem. We are here to express the truth of who we are. And that's when we do start to hook up with our tribe, you know. And when I started my YouTube channel, you know, it was, I think, 3 years ago now that I've been doing it. It was all around this time in 3 years ago that I started it all, my Facebook and my YouTube and all that. I just did it because I just was finding my own way through the muck and the mud and trying to figure out what the hell was going on through this spiritual path. And I had no clue, but I thought, well, there's got to be at least a couple other people out there that feel the same way. And maybe I could help them through my seeking. That's all it was. I didn't claim to have the answers. And I still don't really claim to have any answers. I just share what I see reflected back at me and my own interpretation of that. And slowly but surely that grew into a thing. And now it's a community. And there are people who, you know, come together in response to the stuff that I share. And that's amazing to me. But it's still just me showing up a couple times a month to say, this is what I think and this is what I feel and this is the impression that I have. And if it resonates, cool. If not, then, you know, that's cool too. Like, I'm not really so tied to what people find as long as it strikes a chord in them on some level. But yeah, I do see the tribe starting to come together, and it's people who are waking up and saying, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I just have to do it. It's like you and Thor and, you know, Aaron and the inspiration to do this. That's the thing. We don't need the plan. It already knows exactly what it is.
Yeah.
The work that you came here to do already knows exactly what it is. So our job is just to follow those nuggets of inspiration and go, oh my God, Thor's amazing. Wouldn't that be cool to document those kind of people, right? And then all of a sudden it's a thing.
Yeah.
And there's the plan right there. And so you don't have to know. And there's no way. You guys could never have, in a million years, have sat down and go, wow, what if there was this dude who drove around in a big 1970 boat LTD or whatever it is with his long blonde hair and his mustache and his shirtless self, and we called him Thor and he was the first wild American. Like, you never would have been able to figure that out. So we just have to show up and let ourselves be inspired.
Definitely.
That's our job.
And along with the idea of tribe, it does seem like it's kind of a... Well, support system maybe isn't the right word, but I know for me, something very reassuring, I think, for others, and it's something that comes across in your work, is that it's okay to have lived a placeholder while you were awakening. Because sometimes I think people can look back and go, oh, you know, I'm really embarrassed by my life.
Yeah.
I don't like what I did, you know. And I think something that your work helps people do, at least I get this message from it, is say, no, it's okay. That was a placeholder. You can't help it. Even if you were born self-aware, you're going to go through a lot of life before you actually really wake up to who you are.
Yeah.
And then you're going to look back and go, oh, what the crap was I doing? And it's, don't worry about it. You were growing roots. The universe kept you out of trouble while you were, you know, you were in training while you were realizing who you really are. And then now that you know, well, okay, now you got to stop being an idiot.
But, right, yeah. You know? But, right, or you have to consciously be more aware that you're an idiot at least. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I do look back on some of my earlier videos and I just sort of cringe. And not only just the production value, but just how I spoke and what I spoke about and my beliefs at the time. You know, they were something now that I look back and I go, well, that was very one-dimensional. Or, you know, I sort of, isn't that sweet? Like, oh, look at me with my idea back then. But you're right. And it's, you know, when the divine self wakes up within us, basically it raises the bar. And it says, this is who you are. And so basically anything less than this is not real. And you can't get away anymore with thinking that it is. So we oftentimes as humans, because we always want to aspire and achieve, right? Or we're always trying to get to the next thing. we oftentimes, and I do that myself still, judge myself and say, oh God, cringe. You know, I call them the winces when you're like, oh God, I can't believe I said that, or I can't believe I did that. But the divine doesn't judge in that way. You know, that judgment only comes from a human place. But I think, you know, I think things like that keep us honest in a sense too, right? I think that, you know, no, we shouldn't be sitting and judging ourselves, but when we can look back on it and laugh and say, oh man, I made that mistake once. Hopefully I won't make that mistake again, or at least I learned my lesson. It gives us sort of a barometer to say, okay, wait, let me think twice about this, right? Is this going to be something else that in another year I'm going to go, oh God, I wish I hadn't done that.
I think it's inevitable.
I think so.
I think we all have to. It helps you to love yourself, and it helps you love yourself and love others in that way where you go, we're all growing so, especially once the acceleration starts, once that self-awareness really roots, like, you're not going to be who you were a week ago and like a month ago or 5 years ago, you know, you go, and so you have to go, you know, I love my history, all those moments and this one. And as I go forward, you're just growing so fast. You can't even, it actually makes you take yourself in the now, I would say, less seriously.
Totally.
Because you go, this is just transitory. Tomorrow I'll be...
Right. And it could all fall apart at any moment. I mean, it literally could all fall apart at any moment. So enjoy it while it's here. You know, enjoy the things that you have if you like having those things. You know, I was thinking about this morning. I love shoes. And so, you know, now that I'm finally making some money where I can support myself and have a little money for fun, I've been buying some shoes. And this morning I was like, God, Andrew, you kind of have gone overboard with the shoes lately. But I thought, you know, that's fine. I mean, you know, yes, shoes are a thing. But if I had to give it all up tomorrow, I would. And yeah, I would be sad that I didn't get to wear those new pair of shoes, but it's fine. It's not who I am, and it certainly doesn't define me, but I like it, right? And isn't that the sort of the knife's edge that we walk through, having the fullness of that human experience and allowing ourselves to have the things? Because we don't need to, you know, it's not about sitting in a cave, banging on a drum and eating a grain of rice anymore either. You know, this sort of self-deprivation thing, we don't really need to do that anymore, I don't think, and surrender in that same way. You just have to have a good understanding of it and not take it all so seriously. Laugh at it.
And I'm not convinced, actually, this is, I don't want to sound too conspiratorial, but I'm not convinced a lot of it ever even happened. Like, how do we know it did? I don't think so, because it sounds awful.
Yeah.
And how would you talk anybody into that?
Right,
we have the spiritual path. First of all, you know, do this, now freeze and go and do this and do that. They just think, I'll just farm.
Right, exactly.
I'm okay.
Yeah, I'll just find some joy. You know, I've been reading this book, The Application of Impossible Things by Natalie Sudman, and it's an amazing book. It's about this woman who was a civilian contractor in Iraq, and she had a near-death experience, and she goes to this place. She was blown up by a roadside bomb, and she goes to this place. She calls it the Gathering, and it's like this group of souls when she's sort of in between life and death, and she's deciding if she wants to come back or not. And she says, you know, there's a moment where they tell her, they're like, you know, there is no judgment of a human life from the perspective that we've been taught. There's no man in a, you know, with a long white beard saying you're naughty or you're nice. That's Santa Claus. But there is no judgment in that sense. But there is an assessment of a life. And the way that they, you know, what they told her and what she learned was the only way that it's ever assessed is by three things. How much did you grow and evolve from a soul perspective? What did you create? And how much joy did you experience? Mm. And that's it. That's it. There's the only three criteria that a life is ever judged as successful or not by. And when you think of it in those terms, that is a game changer. Because then it does become like if someone says, but Andrew, why would you give all that up? You had an amazing job. But I wasn't happy. I wasn't joyful. It wasn't my life. I felt like a stranger in my own skin. We didn't come to do that, right? We didn't just come here to work until you're half dead and then be happy on the weekends or, you know, after retirement age or whatever. That's not the point. And we've been taught that that's the point. And I think that's where we are right now. This tipping point that we're at on the planet right now is us going, who the hell ever decided that this hot Aussie and Harriet, you know, model of life was the one that we all wanted to sustain? I don't think anyone ever said, yeah, this is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think anyone was ever really happy with that. And it's kind of the same thing with the spiritual experience. I don't think anyone was ever really happy with that ideal. I think we were just told that this is what you should aspire to do. And that made a lot of people really rich. And that made a lot of people really, you know, successful in their own mind on the backs of others. And I think now we're waking up and going, no, that's not the model really that I want to sustain or that I want to support.
Mm, well, those three assessments, that's actually, that's one to have on your fridge.
Yeah.
And think about it and go, yeah, because that's very empowering. You go, okay, how does it help with these three assessments? I like that because that's something you can use every day.
Totally. And it's a model that's sustainable. So if in this lifetime I didn't experience a lot of joy, then I can say, all right, well, in the next one I do. right? Mm-hmm. And in every action, in every moment, even as, you know, from a human perspective, that serves us right now. Like, you and this project is a perfect example. You just thought it sounded like a cool idea, and you're creating something that brings you joy through the exploration of these people that you identify as these characters that you call Wild Americans, and that's super exciting.
Yeah.
That's super exciting, and it feeds you, and it feeds other people, and it'll feed your listeners. I mean, those three criteria, man, if you don't do anything else, just live by those three.
Yeah.
Wow. Seriously.
Well, that's a good place to leave it. I don't want to eat up your whole thing. I appreciate it. I could just keep talking forever.
I could, too.
All right. There we go. Now process and don't crash. Awesome. Perfect. I love this. Duration 1.1. 1 hour, 1 minute. That's
awesome.
Wow. 55 seconds. Wow.
This was fun.
Oh, it was fun. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm glad this all, you know, that we all connected, you know.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because Erin is, she's a huge fan, of course. And, you know, it was like, I was like thinking, oh, I hope I don't screw this up.
No.
I was like, oh, because I had to. Because it's growing pretty fast. So it was mm-hmm. our idea, and then it's gotten started. Done a few interviews. We have to get those up. We'll get yours up right away. Erin will draw you. She'll like do this. You'll love it. There'll be a great depiction. You
know, that's
she's
cool.
Really, she's really looking forward to that. And then we'll get that up, and we just have more and more to do. So we're getting, and then there's her niece is involved, and she's very outgoing. So we're just, the neat thing is, yeah, I guess you know you're on the right path when the universe is helping, because it just keeps growing. I'm like, well, I can't do it myself. Erin's like, she can't. We have her niece helping. We're like, this is sort of just getting almost in a blissful, crazy, remarkable, creative way, like out of control.
Yeah.
And you go, wow, you know. Like, this is awesome. We're just like, rather than trying to push and make it happen, we're just holding on.
Yeah, totally. And just letting it pull you forward.
Yeah, just trying to like keep up with it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's exciting.
Oh, yeah.
It's so exciting when that tipping point occurs and you start to feel like, oh my God, this is more than I can chew. I need other